Good afternoon. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31, Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. We're meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phones as a courtesy. Today, committee members present are Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, and Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Wilson. We have a quorum to do business. We have three items on today's agenda. We'll have a presentation overview of Senate Bill 93, the Health Insurance All Payers Claim Database, and Senate Bill 92, Missing Persons Under the Age of 21 Years of Old. And at this time, we'll go to SJR 4, which our committee heard on, March 16th. We took an overview and had testimony of this resolution, and our office received no amendments. And at this time, are there any other questions for the bill sponsor, Senator Reinbold?
You just want to make sure you acknowledge my presence.
Oh yes, Senator Reinbold is here as well today. Yes, thanks. Sorry about that, Senator Reinbold. Seeing no other questions, is there a motion to move this bill from committee or resolution from committee? Senator Hughes.
Yes, there is, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Joint Resolution Number 4, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objection?
Object.
Seeing an objection, you want to speak to your objection, Senator Begich?
I do not at this time.
All right. We'll take a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair.
Well, before we do that, Senator Hughes?
Yeah, if I could just make a statement. I want to make it clear for those that might be listening and following. This is a resolution is moving through the committee process, and so a yes vote means it's going on to the next committee of referral. And also, as a reminder to those listening, this eventually, if it were to pass both bodies, would go before the voters. So this doesn't at this time change present policy. Thank you.
I guess I will speak to my objection.
Yes, Senator Begich.
The reason I'm objecting to this bill is that it specifically highlights only one gender in terms of removing the protections of the right to privacy, specifically gender-specific, in that a woman's right to choose would eventually be impacted by the consequence of removing questions of abortion from the issue of right to privacy. I've spoke on this before, and I'll speak on it again on the floor. If it gets to the floor, I object to that. And so it's an irony, perhaps, in a way, but so I just wanted to register my objection. And I intend on being a do not pass on the resolution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Oh, with that, anything else? We'll go to a roll call vote. Ms. Frey?
Senator Hughes?
Yes.
Senator Costello?
Yes.
Senator Reinbold?
Yes.
Senator Begich?
No.
Senator Wilson?
Yes. With four yeas and one nay, Senate Joint Resolution 4 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign paperwork, and we'll invite our next presentation for SB 93 to the table. Next up, we have Senate Bill 93. This is our first hearing of this bill. We'll take an overview and take public testimony. This is sponsored by Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the governor. Before us, we have Director Lori Winghier from the Division of Insurance, who will be presenting the bill here today. Also available for questions is Heather Carpenter, Healthcare Policy from the Department of Health and Human Services, with Renee Gayhart for the Director of Healthcare Services. And we have Heidi Lindendorfer, the Chief Data Officer from the Division of Health and Social Services. And Emily Ritchie, the Chief Health Policy Administrator from the Division of Retirements and Benefits from the Division from the Department of Administration. And with that, Director Winghier, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, members of the committee, for taking your time to hear this bill today. For the record, I'm Lori Winghier, and I am the Director of the Division of Insurance. And I am here, as are my team members on the line, to talk about SB 93. An all-payer claims database. It's not a new concept. We've discussed it before in this state. But this year we have a bill in front of us, SB 93, that the governor has introduced. I have been the director since 2014, and I don't think there has been a year or a member of the legislature that I have not discussed the cost of health care or the cost of health care insurance with. It really started with the ACA, which is about the time that I took this position, when we saw the individual market increase. We saw the employer's market increase. It didn't matter if you were a large employer with a self-insured plan or a small employer. The cost of health care, we were noted in Alaska for being certainly the highest in the nation, if not the highest in the world, some would say. We know that this has had an impact on employers as they strive to put together a health care plan for their employees that they can actually afford and continue to grow their business. We also know that physicians and other providers have worked very hard with payers, be it an employer directly or with the insurance companies, for stronger and stricter network agreements. About 2 years ago, the first time I heard what was then the triple aim was Providence. Providence put on a seminar and invited legislators and administration officials, as well as other providers throughout the state, to talk about how we could transform healthcare. At that time, it was the triple aim, and now we refer to it as the quadruple aim. And in that, we looked at goals to improve the patient experience, improve the provider experience, have better outcomes from health, and importantly, lower the cost of healthcare. This is still going on. It is not a project that has stopped, and frankly, it never will. But the quadruple aim is a goal for us all to work hard on for Alaskans. The quadruple aim, as well as conversations around the cost of health care, have had broad community involvement. The administration and the legislature, congressional delegation, our tribal partners, several groups from the Alaska Policy Forum to the Mat-Su Health Foundation, insurance companies, and providers have met many times in many different forums to discuss the cost of health care or transforming the health care system in Alaska. This goes back and ties back into the quadruple aim of what are we trying to achieve. Mat-Su Health Foundation, I think in your packet you will see that along with the Alaska State Medical Association and AARP have submitted letters of support for this bill. But what is missing? We talk about the cost of health care, but what we don't seem to have is succinct, organized data. I can pull data from insurance companies, and Emily from the retirement and benefits can pull it from AlaskaCare. Renee can pull it from Medicaid. And we can ask others for it if they want to volunteer their information. But the problem is we all have different systems. We're all coming from different databases, and there's no way to merge it to look at an aggregate cost of health care. Alaska has many reports on health care, but we don't have data. The reports tell us that health care costs a great deal, but they don't offer any solutions because they tell us we don't have enough data. Over 10 years of reports that the state has paid for, not to mention those that ICER from the University of Alaska have put out, talking about data needed to transform, to finally take a step forward to the quadruple aim and to being able to transform healthcare for Alaskans. Many of these same reports came to the conclusion that what we needed was an all-payer claims database. So again, this is not a new concept. This is not something that we have just made up this year. There's reports back to 2013 to the state of Alaska urging the state to consider an all-payer claims database. So what is an all-payer claims database? Generally speaking, they're hosted either directly in the state or through a contract where the state would do an independent procurement bid to hire a contractor to collect the data for the state in an organized format. Particular intention is given to privacy because it is healthcare. Keep in mind this data exists somewhere, but the transfer to the database and who can access it and under what conditions. Our proposal is to hire a contractor, that the state, the Division of Insurance in this case, along with our partners with HESS and Retirement and Benefits, would contract out for a database manager. We would have a lead organization to be the Division of Insurance, a lead organization to help us through this process of an all-payer claims database, and then we would have the data management vendor. We would submit that Medicaid would submit their data, as would private payers, insurance companies, and third-party adjusters. Submit the data in a predetermined standard format, and again, particular attention will be paid to privacy to protect individuals. The data will be de-identified, meaning that you can see the cost of claims, you can see the cost of procedures, but you will not be able to put it back into who had the procedure done.
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Is it okay to ask a question during the process? So that de-identification, I know that's very important to me and to my district, privacy in that regard. So names obviously wouldn't be included. What about Social Security numbers or anything that could be traced back? You said it wouldn't, but I just want on the record that it's not going to have anything that could be tied back to the patient.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you, because it's not. There will not be a personal identifiable identifier. It will be aggregated data, but you will not be able to track it back down to one of your constituents or to an Alaskan period. It will be de-identified to the point that in the smaller communities in Alaska, we're going to have to merge them into a geographic region so that you can't pull someone out of a village, a rural entity of 50 people, where it would be pretty easy to identify someone with a high-cost condition or a condition that you just would know. This will not allow you to do that.
Thank you for that clarification. And actually, I was going to follow it up with the question about the small villages, and you already answered that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Casella.
Thank you. And Director Wingheyer, will the data that we eventually get show the provider? So, for example, if OPA in Anchorage charges a certain amount for a broken arm, and you know, up in Fairbanks there's an outfit that charges a different amount, will we be able to see that, or will it be averaged? Because to me, an average won't be as helpful as the hot, you know, looking at the disparity.
Through the chair, Senator Costello, you will be able to see it by provider, but only to a degree. The federal law that we're going to talk about in a minute here says that we have to keep private the proprietary financial information, what OPA may have negotiated with an insurance company. That data is going to have to be kept confidential. So you'll be able to see it as OPA, but you won't be able to see their contract of what they negotiated with Primera or Moda or Aetna.
Follow up? Please continue.
APCDs are becoming more and more, if you will, popular in the lower 48. There are over 20 states that have APCDs now. They have been around for over 10 years in some states. And the benefit of that is we will be working with some of our partners that we can learn the mistakes made in the past so that we can avoid making those mistakes as we put our database together. Why now? If not now, when? And if not us, who? Getting back to the quadruple aim, at some point we're going to need to take that first step if we are dedicated to transforming healthcare. If we're dedicated to looking at a quadruple aim for Alaskans with improved outcomes, lower cost, and a better experience for the patients and the providers. And the No Surprise Bill Act was passed by Congress in D.C. in late December 2020. It was funded through the Consolidated Appropriation Act of 2021. This gave us a gentle nudge to look towards the all-payer claims database, as it provides us some guidance in how to establish an APCD, but it also provides grants of $2.5 million to each state that will either improve their current database or will adopt a database in their state. And that is one of the big reasons why we are here in front of you today. $2.5 million will give us a good head start on having this database in Alaska.
Yes, because other states are doing it. Do you plan to do some comparisons compared to other states? We all have heard that we're the highest healthcare cost state, but I'm just wondering if you'll be able to drill down more particularly, because if we have this database and other states do, will that be part of the conversation going forward once we have this up and running?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, yes. A researcher, an insurance company, an employer would be able to go, let's say, to Colorado's database and pull data to compare it to ours. The federal government, which we're going to talk about that bill in a little bit, but the Secretary of Labor is charged with designing a standard format, and we have to agree to that standard format as a part of the $2.5 million grant. So we would be able to pull and do comparisons in states, North Dakota, and wherever there would be a database that we would want to compare ourselves to.
Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so this is interesting. First time looking at this. I'm going to just start with a plunge. It looks like on page 3, it says $3.9 million. Can you explain that on page 3?
I'm sorry, Senator, through the chair, page 3.
Of
the PowerPoint or the bill?
It says the State of Alaska, Governor Dunley, Department of DCCED, the sectional analysis. And then it attaches fiscal notes, and on page 3 of the fiscal note, it says $3.9 million.
Through the chair, that is Hess's fiscal note, I believe, Senator Reinbold. And Heidi is on, if you want to ask her now to explain her fiscal note.
Yeah, let's get through the presentation, and then after the sectional, we can go through the fiscal notes and the bill's questions. Okay.
So I definitely do have some questions.
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so let's start on page 1.
Before the bill, let's finish the presentation, then we go in after the sectional analysis, then we can go through the bill's questions for the bill. If you have specific questions on the pages of the bill before we finish the presentation.
The No Surprise Bill Act, as I said, was part of the Consolidated Appropriation Act, which is 5,500 pages. And back on 1628, it starts this No Surprise Bill Act, and you get to 1956, and it's going to talk to you about the APCD, which is about 15 pages of the act. What it tells us, as the No Surprise Bill, is that it will provide a structure to protect consumers against surprise bill. Now, I need to go off just a little bit to talk about this, because it kind of gives you an idea of why we think the APCD is important now. This does not mean that anybody who goes to the doctor will never get a billing. This means, and there's a lot of variations, that you go to an in-network ER facility, but the provider is out of network. You wouldn't get a surprise bill in that case. Variations of that, the facility is out of network, but the provider is in. Again, in an emergency situation, you will not get a surprise bill. It also includes air ambulances, because they are most definitely in an emergency situation where you don't have a choice. Other times you would go to the doctor, you will still have a cost sharing, you will still have a copayment, you will still have a deductible. So that's the basis for the No to Surprise Bill. But it also goes on to talk about providers will now have to work with you on consent provisions for non-emergency procedures. They have to establish a directory of providers. A dispute resolution process, and what that is then when the surprise bill is now between the provider and the insurance company or the payer on a self-insured plan. The patient, the consumer is taken out of it, but what they're reimbursed is now up for negotiation on an emergency basis. It establishes a dispute resolution process for this negotiation as to what the provider should be reimbursed from the payer. It provides guidance for continuity of care, meaning that if a doctor were to leave a network agreement, either because he's decided to not participate with that insurer or retire, the insurance company has to work, or the employer has to work with the patient on continuity of care. So if your provider, you were being treated for X and your provider left that network, they would still have to pay at in-network rates for you for 90 days or so till they could get you to a physician in-network that could perform the same types of services. It requires insurers and other plans to have a price comparison tool. And this gets into transparency. And I know Senator Hughes has a bill up on the right to shop. And this is a tool that would help on that, where consumers could see what the costs are. So there's a transparency element to it. It also modifies the data that's got to be on insurance card. It requires the plans to provide an advanced explanation of the benefits. And finally, the all-payer claims database.
Yes, Senator Hughes.
What is the effective date for these items in the No Surprise Bill, like, for instance, the comparison tool?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, I'm going to have to get back to you on that, but I believe it's January 2022. Some of the dates differ, but I believe it's January 2022.
Okay, and quick follow-up?
Yes, follow-up.
In that bullet that it mentions requires insurers and other plans to have the price comparison tool, and I know that's not what your bill is about, but on page 4 of the all of your PowerPoint, it lists the sources of data, and we're calling this an all payers claim database, but my understanding is there are the union providers that some aren't included in your database. In fact, I was talking to Healthcare Association this morning, and they said it would be more properly named a some payers claim database. Who is being left out of the database? And then if you happen to know, for that third bullet on the right, whether everyone or it also restricts and we won't get that comparison tool for every type of insurer.
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's a great question. Trust, self-insured employers, union trust, are voluntary. The way we have this bill structured will be insured plans, third-party administrators that are not unions or trust, and Medicaid will put their data in, and Alaska Care. It will be voluntary for other large employers. And we know we've talked with some that we think will, and we'll see as it grows if we will get more participants. I think there's a little bit of fear of the unknown. We've never done this before, of what the data will be used for. But that being said, they will still have access to it. They will still be able to use the tools that are in this bill. This bill was written with a Department of Health and Human Services in D.C., the Department of Labor for the ERISA plans, the trust, and with the Department of Treasury for the funding and the guidance on it.
Yes, Senator Hughes?
And just a very quick, so those that are required versus those that aren't, but it's voluntary, what is the breakout roughly in percentage in Alaska of the patients that fall under? Are we talking about, 75% would be in the database and 25 wouldn't, or what would the breakout be?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, the way we have it structured right now, we're guesstimating somewhere between 35 and 40%.
Would be in it?
Yes, would be in it.
Okay.
Follow up.
Yes, Senator Baggage, Senator Reinbold.
So I'm curious, in our conversation, we talked about this similar issue offline. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The and Lori, what I'm looking at is page 2, from line 25 to page 3, line 1. Where does it actually say that the voluntary plans or the trusts won't be mandated? Because it seems to give explicit power to the healthcare commissioner to require any plan to submit. So if you
are
at
page 2, sir?
Line 25, the director may, one, except as prohibited under federal law, the director may require a healthcare insurer operating in the state to submit healthcare data. So are you saying that the federal law is what protects the trusts and the voluntary plans there? And I want to draw attention to that so that I can completely put a stake through that belief that exists out there that this somehow will force a trust or a voluntary plan to have to provide data to you.
Through the chair, Senator Baggage, I do not. There is not a state entity that has control over ERISA plans, which is what the trusts are. They are regulated by the Department of Labor out of D.C., mm-hmm. and this except is prohibited under federal law, that is exactly. There was a big court case where Maine tried to do an APCD. And they got slapped pretty hard for trying to make the state, for trying to make the trust comply. We have no intention of asking, if the trust want to volunteer, we will gladly include them. But we do not have the authority to mandate that the trusts submit their data to the APCD.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I brought that up, thank you, Lori, for that, is I wanted to explicitly place that on the record that there is a specific part of this bill that directly addresses that question about what the state can and cannot do in terms of mandating reporting and to who it can do it to. And I appreciate that very much, Lori. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bramble.
Okay, so it looks like we're still stuck on the presentation. I have several questions in regards to the presentation. First of all, I want to ask you, does this have anything to do with COVID money in any way?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbolt, no, ma'am, it does not.
Including the grant?
Including the grant.
Okay, thank you. Through the chair, I have a series of questions. In regards to, I pulled up the State of Reform that happened on September 30th that we were all invited to, and this is in regards to an all-payer database as well. Can you see, is there any link in any way with the same people with this? And if you can describe the relationship, if there is one, with the State of Reform?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, off the top of my head, I can't remember what happened at the State of Reform, but they are not a part of this bill, nor will they be, they would not be a viable entity to bid on it. So I will go back and look a little further, but my answer is, at this point, is no. There is no link between the State of Reform and this bill.
Okay, through the chair? Okay, because a lot of the same people, you know, Heather Carpenter, you know, et cetera, involved, and it was in regards to a all-payer database. That was one of their key features, and it was put on by Senator Von Imhoff and Representative Sponholz. And it's pretty much aligned.
Yeah. Senator Wilson, if I may, Senator Reinbold, last year, Representative Sponholz and Sponholz and Senator Von Imhoff introduced an APCD bill. And again, I don't know, I'm afraid I didn't attend the all-peer or the State of Reform last year, but there was a bill last year. It did not move far. It was a different bill than this, but the goal was absolutely the same, to get an APCD.
And I'm trying to remember the name of, it used to be the healthcare transformation project, now it's a healthcare, Alaska healthcare blueprint.
It was the blueprint, now it's
the healthcare transformation act that has about 90 or so stakeholders involved, and I believe those two representative and the senator are on the executive committee, and myself and Clayman also serve on that as members as well, that looks at healthcare costs around the whole state of Alaska and trying to find solutions. And I think that was one of the action items out of that work, out of that group. And I think they were presenting on behalf of that stakeholder large group, as my memory serves right, because other folks are involved in
Mr. Chairman, it was a big group. We listed them in our community involvement slide up in the beginning of this, because they are very active, and you're absolutely correct. Senator Von Imhoff and Representative Sponholz are members of the executive team or the executive committee of that organization. That, for people would know, that's the Sandra Heffern. I think she's the executive director or such that has led that for the last couple of years with funding, I think, by the Rasmussen and Natsu Health Foundations.
And the state of Alaska.
And the state of Alaska, sir.
Yes. All right, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. So what were you saying about the Rasmussen Foundation?
I believe that, through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I believe that they partially funded the Alaska Healthcare Transformation Project, as did the Natsu Health Foundation and the state of Alaska.
Yeah, and through the chair, I see Minard, M-I-N-A-R-D. I'm not sure if that's related.
Minard.
I'm sorry?
Minard. It's the Minard.
Right. They're Natsu. It's all in here. But bottom line is that it looks like you're correct from 9 to 9:50, Adam Crum and then Senator Begich, it says Representative Sponholz, Bill Wilkowski, Rep. Hannon were part of this. And then when you look at the budget, Von Imhoff, Representative Tarr, and Senator Sedman were also in regards to this. And then, as you said, Senator Wilson, Kathy Tilton, and Ben Carpenter were part of this. Bottom line, it did discuss COVID and the impacts of COVID, and that's why I wanted to make sure that is it related or is it not? I needed that clarity. And also in regards to the involvement, important goal was an all-payer healthcare system. So I think that's really important to get on the record. In regards to the division of insurance, in your presentation, you said that you're going to improve patient experience, you're going to provide better outcomes, lower the cost of healthcare, and improve staff experience. I'd like to know exactly how you're going to do that.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, the division of insurance is not going to do that, but we're going to be a part of it. And part of that is getting the data. And this data will not only be cost, but there will be a quality metric, which will help on patient outcomes and improve the patient experience. In the end, it should lower healthcare costs, because if you have better outcomes, less readmissions and such, your cost goes down. And to improve the provider experience, because frankly, the providers, they've been beat up over the cost of healthcare. And some of it has been objective and some of it has been subjective, where we know we're high, but we've never had the aggregate data to be able to really delve into why we're high or exactly where we're high and compare ourselves to others.
And through the chair?
Yes, Senator Ramble.
It's pie in the sky. I mean, I've been around the block far too many times. This just sounds absolutely lovely. And then, you know, the silver bullet is $4 million of more state bureaucracy. It's just sometimes it doesn't add up for me. And that's why I'm a little skeptical. Because this is a pretty significant growth of government. In regards to the broad community involvement piece, you said the administration, the legislature, tribal, the Health Transformation Project, Alaska Policy Forum, Matsu Foundation, insurance companies. Can you tell how deeply are they involved in this and how are they involved?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold. Speaking on the administration, and again, I want to go back that we've been working on this since I started this position of the cost of health care, and I think the administration has looked at studies and ways to cut health care and to how do we work with insurance companies, how do we work with providers, and more particularly our own plans for employees. When you look at the Chamber of Commerce, they have been very open in their support to look at the transformation of health care and work with their members. But again, this is one of those where it's going to take a village. No one person or one organization is going to be able to do this. But these groups have, through forums, through projects, through papers, have written to legislators, they've contacted us. They are all extremely interested as an employer, as a part of Alaska, to see the cost of health care either explained as to why it's so much or at least stabilized, if not reduced.
Through the chair.
That last question, we got to get moving on the presentation.
Okay, because I definitely have, to me, just a database, and we have so many in this state, and to make the promise, you know, that all these things are going to be achieved, including the reduction of health care, as it increases government by about $4 million in the first year, it's just not adding up, you know, in my mind. And what I'm concerned about is I'd like to know who the providers are. You say providers. I would like, because to me, they just get regulated and regulated and regulated and regulated, and just more information going out there is a big deal. So one, I'd like the providers, and two, I'd like to know what sort of privacy do you have encrypted? I mean, and what kind of a rating do we have in regards? Last time I checked, it was an F in regards to privacy rating for our data in the state, and I'd like to know this is important information. I mean, this is protected information, and so I just really want to make sure that Article 1, Section 22 says that it's the legislature's responsibility to ensure the citizens' data is protected. And if we authorize this, I want assurances. How are you going to protect this information? This is a huge deal.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, Senator Reinbold, as for the providers, we have a letter of support from the State Medical Association, and that encompasses a number of providers. We have also talked to the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. At some point, I'm sure they will weigh in on this, either anti or for the bill. But there has been strong involvement with the providers. The Alaska Healthcare Transformation Project, the providers were well represented as that project rolled out, as well as with Alaskans for Sustainable Healthcare. As for the privacy, I don't know the rating of the state. I just don't. I'll be happy to take a look and see if I can find that, but I don't know what it is. But this data that we're looking at, this exists in some database somewhere. As we've talked about, it's either with the third-party administrator, it's with the Medicaid system, it's with the insurance companies. We're bringing that data over. We would be bringing that data to our database, de-identifying, and using the strongest possible security that we can to ensure that Alaskans' privacy is protected.
Through the chair, just for, this is at you.
Yes.
I would definitely like to have a hearing in regards to the data privacy. I think it's super, super important and what kind of things they're using where we are right now. And I'd like a specific list of which providers, because this is just a really generic term. And it, you know, this is going to impact providers, so I'd definitely like to get exactly who's involved in this. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Hughes.
And I'm not going to ask a question. I'm just going to make a comment because, I work with the Alaska Primary Care Association. I'm very familiar with, over the decades, we have had task force. We have had healthcare roundtables. We have had all these kind of things trying to improve what we have here, and the costs have escalated during that time. One of the reasons is because we don't have free market principles operating very well in our healthcare system because the costs are unknown. When I go to Fred Meyer, I can see the price tag. You know, when I walk into any kind of business, I can find out what things cost. It's very difficult with healthcare. And so to me, as long as I am insured, there is the utmost privacy and de-identification. I think this is one of the first things that I've seen come out of some of the work over the decades of something that might actually get us somewhere and actually might move the needle. And I'm going to be really concerned about the privacy matter and make sure that that stays put. But actually, you know, this isn't gathering data for the sake of gathering data. This is gathering data to start to move the needle. We are the highest cost place on the planet. And if this is a way to begin to figure out how we can be removed from that top spot, I would like to see it. So being aware of the decades of work and providers sitting around the table, and they are vastly, when we have these task force in healthcare, it is the Alaska Medical Association, the Alaska Dental Association, they're all sitting there and part of these conversations. So if this is what they are promoting that might help us, as long as it's fully de-identified, I think it is a step forward. So I just wanted to put that on the record. I know Senator Reinbold has concerns. I don't want to grow government. Everybody knows that about me. But I tell you, I don't know what we spend on health care a year, but $4 million is a drop in the bucket compared to what private citizens in the state is. We're probably spending $1 billion or something on health care. And if we can help move that needle and help control the costs, I think it's an important step forward. So I just wanted to make that statement.
All right, we're going to continue on because we're behind here a bit.
I'll try to pick up the pace, Senator.
You're fine. I think we covered 12, and I'm interested in that last bullet of 11, which is on your next slide, 13.
Okay. And again, I just put this slide up there. So I talked about a 5,500-page bill, and 15 pages of it are on the APCDs. And a lot of what it will tell you is that the secretaries in D.C. are adopting regs that will talk to us more or define more of what an APCD is going to be. But there is most definitely a grant of $2.5 million available to Alaska. In it, as this says, we have to ensure uniform data collection and privacy and security of data, and we will do our utmost to do that.
Director Winkheim, do you know when this might be available to the states, of when that application process may begin for states?
Mr. Chairman, we are hoping it's available by July 1st. But I think that all that is required in the larger bill, the No Surprise Bill Act, for the federal government with the newest administration to pull off, it's a tall, tall order. But we are hoping that at least the regulations or the rules from the federal government are at least published for comment by July 1st.
Yeah, thank you.
From the federal act. These are the authorized users, and this is what we have to guarantee we can do for the grant of who can access the data and when. And you can tell in this that the entity, as it says on the third bullet that you were talking about, Senator, the entity shall enter into a data use and confidentiality agreement with the state, and the agreement shall include a prohibition on attempts to re-identify, disclose individually identifiable information, and proprietary financial information. And that will be very important to us. It's what we have to have worked out to get the grant, to get this off the ground. It also talks about who we can get, who can access the data for free, and who we can charge, or who we can charge for just cost. This is not set up to make money. And the standard format will be defined by the Department of Labor. And I want to be, I did, and you know, when you do these, you go over your notes 100 times. When it talks about proprietary financial information, that is defined in the act, and it means the data that would disclose the terms of a specific contract between an individual healthcare provider or facility and a specific group health plan, managed care entity, or other managed care organization or health insurer offering group or individual health insurance companies. So those network agreements are considered proprietary information.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on that issue of the cost and the fee structure, the database is available for free for individual consumers, but you would consider, the law, as you just said, allows you to consider a fee-based process, though not a profit process, but you know, to pay for operating costs?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, yes. It does for research, for insurance companies and such, then we have to allow it at cost.
I'd been thinking of doing an amendment related to that issue, but is that necessary if you have the authority to do that, or is that something that you would want to see included in the bill itself?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I would be hesitant to put the pricing in until the federal government gives us some more guidelines of their rules.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, not the pricing, just the authority. You have the authority, you think, under the bill as it's written. So I wouldn't want to put a pricing schedule in here. That would be up to you. But in terms of your ability to charge a fee to businesses or others that would be using or accessing the data.
Through the chair, I'm certainly not an attorney, Senator Begich, but it couldn't hurt, I would say that. But the federal guidelines do provide it, but it might be stronger. I can't say what the drafters would say.
Mr. Chairman, I have the language I'm going to work on then around that to submit as an amendment. That would just provide the authority for basically business access is fee-based to offset implementation and continued operating costs, something like that.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so basically what my concern is, this just sounds like a repeat of the Common Core database. The Common Core database was an ACPE, and it ended up getting linked into the permanent fund dividend. All sorts of information. I can't opt out of it. Nobody can opt out of this information if they, and so that's more education, and it ended up being tied back to the permanent fund dividend. This just, it looks now healthcare, and healthcare to me is even a bigger deal than education. So we even had our what I'm really concerned about is the breach of data. Even the elections data got breached. As you know, that's been a big deal, and it's definitely impacted my area, and people are not happy. I do not trust the state, to be straight up honest. I do not think that we have the top of the notch encrypted security. This is too much liability for me. So I have a question for you in regards to, do you have to comply with HIPAA here? I mean, I know you're not a provider, but it, to me, I would be resistant if I was a provider and wanting to provide information and trust the state with it. I mean, no offense, but this is a huge deal, and there can be some pretty serious criminal penalties for violating HIPAA.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, we are not collecting data from the providers. We're collecting it from the payers.
Through the chair, it from the providers. The providers have to play a role, or there's no health care.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I agree with that. But it will come to us de-identified. And we're using a contractor. We are not holding this in a state database or in a state period. It will be with a security company or a data security company, and all I can ask for in the RFP is the strictest standards to guarantee the privacy of Alaskans and their data in this database.
through the chair.
We're going to continue on, Senator Reinbold here.
What will we collect? Again, the Secretary, and it's the Secretary of Labor, will establish and periodically update what we can collect for medical claims, pharmacy claims, dental claims, eligibility, and provider files. And again, that's coming from the insurance companies. There is nothing in this that is asking for the providers to submit directly to the database. And this is, I know we're going to do a sectional, but this is SB 93. And the sectional, which we will go over when we finish this. And how does this work? Just a simple graph to show you what can, where it would go in, how we envision this, of coming from the payers on the left into the lead organization and the data manager to us being able to get APCD reports and data products to help us in the, our goal of reforming healthcare.
Yes, on the slide.
Yes.
Yes.
So getting to that very last box there, the data products box, one of the other amendment ideas I've been thinking about after reviewing the legislation with my staff was the concept of ensuring that that data is easily accessible to the consumer. And so I thought, and again, I'm only posing this theoretically. If you don't like the idea, tell me it's a bad idea and I'll drop it. But it's the idea of maybe developing that database in conjunction with Better Business Bureau, Consumer Protection Group, or something of that nature. And there's a way to word that in the law. That is that something that you would?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, the federal law is going to require this database to have a front-facing entity where people can comparison shop and pull data. Again, it's not going to give real specifics, but you would be able to go in, and as I've talked about to Senator Hughes' bill, if you were looking to shop, you would see that data and the different providers and what the cost might be.
Perhaps the better approach, Mr. Chairman, for me, would be just to suggest in the RFP rather than put it in the legislation that you ensure that whoever you hire to create that database does so by working with a consumer group that understands how difficult it can be, particularly in my district where we have over 100 languages spoken, so we have a lot of folks who aren't proficient in English, who may not have access to the internet, which is also the case in many areas of rural Alaska. So our ability to access that database, if that could be considered as part of your RFP, perhaps there's a line that in an RFP drafted consideration of consumer end products should be, something like that. Maybe it's not an amendment, but it's something that I would hope that
Director Chair, Senator Begich, that's a good idea. I had not thought of the language barriers or at having it down, they talk to you about when you write to have it at a certain level where people can understand, and it's not too technical, and healthcare and insurance certainly can be. And I will take that into consideration most definitely that, the common consumer has got to be able to understand what they're pulling and what it means to them.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll just submit that in the form of a letter as opposed to an amendment, and so it'll become part of the record.
Thank you. Senator Costello, then we're going to go to the sectional.
Thank you. Director Winghire, so the customer goes to a database to see the potential costs of going to a particular provider. What happens if they go to the provider and the bill that they receive is different than what information they received from the database?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, that is part of this new No Surprise Act. They are to be given, if you choose a provider, they have to give you now an estimate up front, and if that estimate is wrong, bearing unforeseen consequences and such, then there is a reporting provision back to the federal government, but there is most definitely a dispute resolution process if there is a difference between what you are quoted, for lack of a better word, to what your final bill is. And that's under the No Surprise Bill in the federal side.
To this point, and so I think this is really important. As you guys know, I spent a lot of years in healthcare in regards to like chief operating officer of Medical Park Family Care, and it was very, very, very frustrating because people would say they were coming in for a headache, so you'd want to treat for the headache. Well, then once they got into the office, then it ended up being multiple other issues that they didn't want to tell the front desk person that they were really there for. So they call and they say that it's going to be a $75 charge or whatever. Well, then they get back there and there's a whole bunch of other issues, and it ended up the bill was much different than because they weren't straight up honest or they wanted their confidentiality protected. They didn't want to really tell them why they were coming in, which is totally understandable. But what frustrates me about this is that it's not like going to a grocery store and buying a box of cereal. I mean, this is your health care. This is very complicated, and it depends on your specialty and the type of a physician or provider that you are. Some of them are quick in and out. Okay, I'm only going to see you for the headache today, and then I'm going to kick you out. Other ones want to go and see, dig deeper about their social emotional health and, you know, other things, and give them referrals. So what happens is if we oversimplify it, then they're just going to come back multiple times for visits, rather than, you know, just one more comprehensive visit. So all this, people are trying to simplify this like it's a grocery store, and it's ridiculous in my mind. So I just want to make sure that people understand how stressful it is to run a front desk. I did it in a hospital as well. It was very stressful because it ended up being far more complicated than just the simplicity of what's going on. So with that, I would prefer doing something long-term outcomes, you know, in regards to a physician or a provider. It's much healthier to look at what were your long-term, not just you're right here and now. And that's why this bill does frustrate me. I'll be honest with you, because I think long-term outcomes are far, far more important than just one more database.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, that's one of the quadruple aims, is better health care outcomes. It's exactly what you're talking about, helping to bring the cost down, and that both the provider and the patient have a better experience. All right. And, sir, did you want to go to the
yes,
section?
Yes, we can go through a sectional, and members can hold questions at the end of the sectional, and we can continue.
SB 93 is 4 pages long, and it, in its essence, allows the division to establish a database. Section 1 defines the purpose of the statewide APCD to collect and analyze the data, create a central repository, and provide transparent access to healthcare information. But again, while protecting privacy of the individual and the proprietary data of the provider and their network agreements. It also allows for researchers and such to access, researchers and policymakers to access the data. It must be publishable analytics, systematic collection of data, and enhanced transparency again. The director, and in this case it would be me as of insurance, because that's where this will be housed, will require an insurer to submit data. I will have the ability to enforce established penalties, create agreements for voluntary reporting with other entities, which we know right now are going to be Medicaid and Alaska Care, and maybe someday would be the Union Trust, solicit and receive and administer funding from public and private sources, again applying for the grant, and carry out other activities that would benefit the cost or the transformation of healthcare. Section 2 requires that I go out to bid for the APCD for a contractor. I'm still in section 1, but 2192020. Section 92030 talks about the confidentiality. Again, we are very much looking at the confidentiality and the privacy that would be for the data in this database. And finally, section 1, it allows me to adopt regulations. And that, sir, it provides for an effective date. And Senator Wilson, that's the sectional. It's a pretty yes. Simple bill, just in contracting out.
And before we do questions here, I remiss, I didn't let you go through your last slide.
There was one more to kind of show you how this would go as far as year one, year two, what we think as to when we would really have done. It's fine.
Okay. Senator Begich.
I thank you. Just in that section one part, I guess it is two, which is 0020, selection duties of the lead organization. It is possible that I could draft those two amendment ideas, put them in here. The idea of the, RFP, including the consumer concepts, since this is the requirement right here. I hadn't thought to do it there, but I'm just, I'm just posing that question. What I would propose, directors, I'll come up with these two ideas, share them with you, and if you think that they are acceptable or consistent with what we're trying to do here, then I'll put them in as amendments. Otherwise, I'll just leave them with you as suggestions. But the second one I forgot to mention, Mr. Chairman, was just engaging those various stakeholders in, as you do this process, in ensuring that you do it in that it's done with their input to the contractor as well, not just here at the front end saying this is a good idea, but actually requiring the contractor to work with that stakeholder group that you've identified, maybe formalizing a little bit, and so that they're actually responding to our needs. I think one thing Senator Reinbold's made clear here is we have to make sure anything that we pass is responsive to the community and the people that are engaged in it. And I have one final question, Mr. Chairman. Okay. Senator Hughes really focused on the privacy issues, and I keep coming back in my mind to one privacy issue in particular, small communities, small villages. In the census process, they use a process called differential, I think it's called differential assignation or something like that, where it's really just a process that ensures if you're getting data from Kwikset, people are going to know who you're talking about, whether there are confidentiality elements. So would you consider using a differential process, which is this process for allocating a person's data to a place within region but not necessarily within village for communities under a certain size? That may not need to be in the bill, but I'm just talking about that in terms of the privacy issues, because I know you've, Senator Hughes, really expressed concern about that.
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I don't know why we wouldn't. I mean, we all agree. I mean, all my team members that are on here, that this has to be de-identified. And if that means putting it in, you know, transferring someone's data, let's say, from Koptovic to Anchorage, we're still going to get the cost, which is what we're after, but it may not show up as a North Slope claim where it might be identifiable. I don't know why we would be.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that it's differential privacy, and that that would just be one of the concerns I'd put on the table. And I think that I support this bill, but with just those little caveats that I've mentioned.
Senator Hughes.
And as follow up to that, you had mentioned when I had asked you that you would be grouping villages for that reason. Is that required in the legislation, or that was just your plan? Because you know, in future years, you might not be in that seat. It might be someone else. So I'm just wondering if we need to get that in the bill itself.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, we have talked about it internally. I don't know. The federal bill requires that it be de-identified. I don't know off the top of my head that it says that I have to look at the geographic regions to pull someone out, or how many I should merge together population-wise to form one group. But we have most definitely talked about it internally within the administration of what we can do. I mean, we had kind of the same experience with the reinsurance program, where to make it so someone couldn't point a claim out, we had to do a more aggregate approach, because we don't want anybody with a scarlet letter, you know, because of a healthcare condition.
Yes,
so maybe we can think about making sure that's a durable feature of this. And I have a question regarding the key task and timing, right, the previous slide before the thank you. What does LO stand for on year two and year three?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, lead organization.
Okay, and one follow-up
yes.
to that. Because we're seeing more and more Alaskans choose to use providers outside the state, and sometimes those are actually even in network, like for instance state employees might choose to have care done out of state, so they won't have the out-of-pocket cost to the same degree if they have it in state. Would you be able to collect the data, de-identified data, from out-of-state providers, or what authority would you have in that regard?
Senator Hughes, through the chair, I would say yes, because we're getting it from the we're getting it from the payer, not the provider. So it would come back in to that way. And we'd have to look at do we need to de-identify it? And I have not thought of that, of someone coming in and they were at Mayo in Minnesota. And would that then lead to being de-identified? We will have to look at that, because I know we do a lot of out-of-state health care.
And then would you have a way to track that so we could see maybe as we analyze the data what percentage of things are people actually leaving the state? That actually might be helpful information in what types of procedures and things like that people are choosing to go out of state.
I, through the chair again, Senator Hughes, I would think we would be able to, so we could look at how much health care is going to, let's say, Seattle as opposed to Anchorage. But again, I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that we don't want to put anyone in an awkward situation of the one person that went to New Hampshire.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Thank you.
Senator Reinbold.
Okay. So just at a high level philosophy thing, I'm much more of a, if you really want to bring the health care costs down in the state of Alaska, increase vitamin D, you know, encourage people to exercise, choose healthier lifestyles, eat healthier, things like that. I mean, that's what's really going to do it, not one more bureaucratic growth of government and another database, you know, to look at. That's my personal opinion. But so this is just, it's a little takes me back a little to just, you know, concentrate in regards to this bill, because we know what actually works. But in regards to the bill, let's start with page number one. There's a central repository of healthcare information. And it says on here, on line 13, you want transparent access. So obviously you're going to let a bunch of people access this data. And it says while protecting individual privacy and proprietary data. Like, tell me what you're protecting exactly.
Personal?
Because obviously you're going to get personal data and proprietary information if you have to protect it.
Well, personal identifiable data, information, that would identify you or a member of your family or one of your constituents as the person that received that health care. And the proprietary information, again, getting back to the proprietary financial information that a provider might have between he and the insurance company or the third-party administrator or the self-insured, where they have a network agreement. That is considered proprietary under the federal bill.
Okay, so through the chair, you would be getting the personal data and the proprietary information, and then you have to figure out a way to protect it. Is that correct? I just want to make sure I'm reading that line properly.
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, I do not believe we will be getting it. I think that's what it says, is that we will have transparent access to healthcare information, but while protecting the individual privacy. So there would be no need for us to get the identified information. We would get it as de-identified.
So through the chair?
Yes, Senator.
The contractor would get it, though. Is that correct? So you wouldn't, as a division of healthcare, you don't think, but you're not sure, but would the contractor be getting that information?
Again, Senator Reitbelt, through the chair, I do not believe so. No, I don't see it. It's de-identified when they get it.
On that point, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Hughes.
The bill says on page 2, beginning in line 13, the systematic collection of at minimum, and then you jump down to line 18, de-identified enrollment files. So the vendor, the contractor, wouldn't be getting it either.
Senator Reinbold?
So who would have it then? Because I'm trying to figure out why we have to protect everything if there's nothing identified. So it's kind of an oxymoron right now.
So, Senator, I think that it's in there to just state that as a double scrubber, just in case, but the provider would give the information to the insurer. The insurer would scrub the information, and that they would give the scrubbed information to the state. And the state is just putting in here in the bill, into law, that they will protect all the information that they get in case, you know, that it will have that any type of protecting the privacy. And so protecting the privacy goes back to the page 2, where it says that they're going to collect the minimum necessary de-identified information. Is that correct?
Yes.
And through the chair?
Yes.
Is there any type, because I know there could be criminal fines if for releasing HIPAA-protected data. Is there any type of fine to anybody in regards to this if any information is released?
If any, through the chair, Senator Reinbold, if any information were released, this, I struggle with that because there has to be information released. That's the why we're collecting it, for researchers and policymakers and to use as transparency piece to look at the cost of your health care. So I can't say that it's not going to be released. That's the purpose of the bill, is to have information. But again, it's going to be de-identified, and what data we do have, we're still, to the highest standards we have, going to protect through the working with the insurers, the other payers, and with the contractor to make sure that the information is de-identified to protect the consumers.
And let me ask a lifeline on the telephone here to maybe they could provide either Heidi or Heather in terms of if a healthcare facility violates HIPAA, which is a federal law, than the feds, there are federal consequences to sanctions. Is that correct, Heidi or Heather?
Heidi Langerfer to the chair. Yes, that is correct. Normally that is the Federal Office of Civil Rights.
All right, and they would also come after the state of Alaska if the state released that information as well?
Heidi Langerfer again for the record. Yes, that is correct.
Through the chair, can I ask you a question?
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. That is actually very helpful. This is where the path I was trying to go down. So the Federal Office of Civil Rights, can you tell me what kind of penalties are issued?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, this is Heidi Langerfer again for the record. Typically, they are monetary penalties.
Through the chair?
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
Can you give me a range?
Senator, if Heidi can provide that information, maybe in writing to the committee. I do want to get someone also wants to testify for this bill. I just want to make sure we have time to get through
them. Can I ask if there's any criminal penalty?
Yes. She said there was just monetary.
Heidi, is there any criminal penalties associated with release of data or no?
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I am not aware of criminal penalties, typically because the enforcement action is taken against organizations.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chairman, just when you get a chance, I have a question for the director on page 3, when the appropriate time is.
Let's go ahead and go open to public testimony. Anyone here in the room in Juneau wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll go on to the phones. And we have Pam Vincham. Vincham, I think.
Yes.
Okay, Pam. If you could state
your
name and affiliation for the record, and spend 3 minutes on your testimony.
Yes, my name is Pam Vincham. V as in Victor, E N T G E N. I'm the executive director of the Alaska State Medical Association, the state's largest physician organization. I'm here to express support for SB 93 and the all-payer claims database. It's obvious to all of us that healthcare quality and cost and delivery is on the forefront of policy debates here and around the country. For ASMA, we believe that the foundation for making good policy decisions rests on good data. We are aware of many studies advocating for an all-payer claims database as the first step to understanding healthcare costs, quality, and delivery, and yet we have yet to take that first step. Instead, we at ASMA constantly debate anecdotal information, old information, and incomplete information. Over the last decade, our state has built a healthcare delivery system that we believe is as good as you can get outside. That hasn't always been the case. As we continue to approach healthcare policy decisions, we at the Alaska State Medical Association do not want to see decisions that undermine the current level of care. Having good, actionable information will be key to making any policy healthcare decisions in the future. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
See anyone else online for testimony? So we will go ahead and close public testimony. Senator Reinbold, you had a question.
I did. On page 3, it said the selection and duties of the lead organization. This is on line 10. It said the director may use a competitive bid process. Why isn't that shall use it a competitive bid process?
Senator Reinbold to the chair, I'd have to go back and ask the drafters. There is absolutely no reason. I mean, there's no way to do this without a competitive bid process for the state through our procurement.
So through the chair, would you mind if I did an amendment and said shall?
No, through the chair, we would not mind if it said shall.
Thank you.
Any other questions for? All right. Well, thank you, Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Committee. I appreciate your time today.
At this time, we'll set this bill aside. Amendments are due to my office at close of business on Friday, 5 p.m., March 26th. And at this time, I don't think we're going to have enough time to get through Senate Bill 92 to give it any due process. So we'll postpone that hearing and may have to hear if we have time on Wednesday. I'm sorry, on Thursday. And that is our last bit of business today. On Thursday, we'll hold an initial hearing on Senate Bill 26, the repeal of certificate of need, and SB 99, the juvenile justice facilities and treatment. Are there any other closing comments for today? Senator Reinbold.
Is that the certificate of need repeal bill? Is that what you stated? Okay, excellent. That's a really good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Seeing nothing else, we are adjourned at 2:44.